Hello, everybody, and good morning on this beautiful Thursday, June 2nd edition of the Volunteer Country on SI Podcast. Got my guy Jake Nichols here with me today. I'm your host, Jack Foster, and it's kind of a two-parter show. First part, we're going to be talking some Tennessee baseball regional preview as they get set to take on Alabama State on Friday night. That is tomorrow night in Lindsey Nelson Stadium starting at 6 Eastern. And then they'll play the winner of Georgia Tech and Campbell on Saturday at 6 Eastern, presumably. And then the winner of the double elimination game on Sunday for the last game of the regionals there. So it's going to be a fun weekend in Knoxville. And let's jump right in, Jake. First off, Blade Tidwell is going to start on Friday night. We learned that from the Tony Basilio show. Yesterday, Tony Vitello said he expects Blade to start. I do not think this is a surprise, but what was your reaction to learning the news?
I was not surprised either, given the way that Blade played last week and just given the presence that he's had for Tennessee this season since coming back from his injury. I think it's a reliable first step on a weekend that you have to have that, and you have to have consistency at all levels.
Yeah, and you know, what do you think this means for the rest of the weekend? I think that Chase Dolander would start on Saturday, probably one of the biggest matchups of the weekend, you could argue. And then they would do the Beam Burns combo on Sunday, maybe use Beam out of the pen this time. I don't know. I liked what they did with the Beam and then getting Chase Burns out of the bullpen. So what do you think is going to shake for Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. I had that written in my notes that Chase Dolander, I think, would get the start on Saturday. And then, like you said, go with Beam and Burns again, maybe with not such a last-minute decision this time, according to what Tony Vitello told us last week. But I think the other question is, you know, how do you use those arms out of the bullpen? You got, you know, a little bit out of Ben Joyce in that championship game. You used Will Mabry, Kirby Cannell, Redmond Walsh, obviously, and then even Wyatt Evans and Xander Sechrist a little bit. So I think that's more where the confusion comes into play, is knowing when to put in those other arms and I guess how long to use them, considering you've got kind of the four main guys there already set.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, we're talking about these relievers, and one you mentioned was Redmond Walsh, and I'll kind of want to talk about Tennessee first before we get into the other teams. You know, there's some records that could be broken this as early as this weekend, and Redmond Walsh is one of those candidates to break a record. He is just one save away from breaking Todd Helton's program save record of 23. He's tied there right now. So if he gets one more, he gets his 24th save. Now, just for fun, Jake, when do you think that'll happen? Will it happen this weekend? I don't know if Tennessee will be in a save situation in the regionals, to be honest. Might happen against Georgia Southern. But when do you think that'll happen, if at all?
I would say that a safer bet would be that it would happen, I think, against Georgia Southern in Supers, but you never know as far as this weekend is concerned, but I would bet on Supers.
All right, and keeping the fun going, Evan Russell has 38 career home runs, which also ties the program record with Todd Helton. Luke Lipsius isn't far away. He has 37 career home runs, which Luke Lipsius, to me, has been hotter at the plate. Evan's given, you know, he's laid some good hits on some balls, but, you know, he just hasn't quite been as hot at the plate as Luke has. Who do you think breaks it first, and when does that happen?
I am going to say that Evan breaks it, and I think it's this weekend.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
Looking at these pitching of these teams, I think it will happen this weekend because pitching isn't too great, so –
yeah.
You got to think that Tennessee, and, you know, Lindsey Nelson plays small, so
right. You
got to think there's going to be some give here. And, yeah, so talking about this Tennessee lineup, though, you know, there's not really much you can say about if it needs to fix anything. But is there anything in particular you're looking for Tennessee at the plate this weekend? You know, we've seen Jordan Beck kind of be in a slump, you could say, even though he did record those back-to-back triples on consecutive Knights and Hoover, which I thought was encouraging. So anything you want to see from this Tennessee lineup that you care to share?
Not particularly. I think just like you said, if anything, maybe see Jordan Beck hit a couple of dingers, you know, just because it seems like he's been due for that a little bit. And then I mentioned Courtland Lawson the other day, but, you know, other than that, this Tennessee lineup is pretty much as good as you can be top to bottom.
Yeah, and, you know, talk about this Tennessee lineup is – you got guys like Christian Moore who can barely even make the lineup. Cause I think right now, you know, they were not starting Blake Burke. Tony Vitello was not starting Blake Burke against lefties, but I don't know how you can even do that now with how well he's been hitting the ball. And right, Jared Dickey, you know, he's not 100%, but he can hit the ball. We saw it in Hoover. I mean, first at bat back in action, he sends one into left field for a base hit. So, you know, what do you think the game plan should be with Dickey and more moving forward in the postseason with Blake Burke hitting so well? Do you think that maybe, you know, Seth doesn't get all the starts in left field or Blake doesn't get all the starts at DH? What would you do with these batters here, and how would you use them? Would you do early pinch hitting? Just I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
I would say that maybe Seth doesn't get all the
it's tough because
because
Seth hasn't been as efficient of a leadoff hitter as you'd want, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah.
He does well at getting on base, but if you ever need him to get a hit, it's more than likely not going to happen. I mean, he's come up big a couple of times, but not as much as I think Christian Moore or Jared Dickey would, especially.
Right.
But like you said, Stevenson's glove is so valuable in left, and just his elite speed and defense. It's a tough situation. I think you just got to start Blake Burke at DH, especially for righty starting. And then if you feel him not in his rhythm that night after two at bats, it's easy to make the quick decision to pinch hit him, you know, with Jared Dickey or with Christian Moore. So,
right. But I think going off that, you know, like you said, you need to kind of, I guess, what is it they say, stick with the hot hand. So yeah, long as he's, you know, slugging the way he is, which obviously he's been dominant here lately. So,
oh, I know he's insane. And, you know, he's three home runs away from breaking the UT freshman single season record of 14 home runs. So he's at 12 now. You know, going back to the record thing, I think Blake Burke has three homers this postseason, you know, going on in the postseason. Do you think so? Yeah.
I mean, at this point, with the way he's produced, how could he not, you know?
Like, right. Yeah. He's a unit for sure. And, you know, with this Tennessee baseball team, what do you think is anything really at stake this weekend? What would really have to happen to Tennessee in this regional against these teams for you to be concerned about their potential to make a deep Omaha run?
I think the only questions to me would be if you have a team that is steel heavy and really good at it, but Tennessee hasn't played one as good at that, I think, since Vanderbilt. And obviously they held Enrique Bradfield at bay. But if a team gets really, 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 I think, good on the base paths, then you might have a little trouble just because outside of that, you know, punch out against Florida, I think Evan Russell's had a few struggles at that, you know, and that's kind of been the one caveat for him, for a guy who, again, hasn't, you know, outside of this season, he's settled nicely into the position, but hasn't played catcher before that since high school. So, you know, I think that if a team can really threaten on the base paths, that could make things interesting for Tennessee, but also, you know, Campbell, I think, is one team that a couple guys have noted could make some noise if things fall the right way, if their pitching does well and holds up against the stacked Tennessee lineup. Then I think you don't necessarily have reason for concern, but, you know, to at least pay a little more attention to it. And then obviously with Georgia Tech, Zach Parada is one of the top players in the country. He's going to be one of the top picks in the draft, and I think that you've got to be able to know what's on that roster as well outside of him, and not just keying in on that one player, but, you know, understanding what else Georgia Tech can offer. I think that, you know, the most dangerous thing Tennessee can do right now is, like you said, to itself. just not, you know, focusing as much on each opponent day by day. And you have to be able to do that no matter who you're facing in this regional, because let's face it, Georgia Tech and Campbell are better than Alabama State's going to be on Friday.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, I have some notes about these teams. So which team you want to dive into first, Georgia Tech or Campbell?
Let's go with Campbell first.
Okay.
Alphabetical order.
All right, sounds good. So, yeah, Campbell's lineup, pretty dang good. Six players have 10 or more homers. Not quite Tennessee level, but pretty freaking good. Five are hitting 300 or above with a minimum of 120 at-bats. Drake Pearson leads the way with 18 home runs. And a couple of guys like to steal some bases, 17 or more attempts from three players on Campbell. They're good at drawing walks. You know, so a lot of times in college baseball, you'll have a really good lineup and poor pitching depth. And I feel like that's kind of the case with Campbell. And Tennessee has seen many, many teams like this year. But I will say that Campbell has a really, really good pitcher that I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. His name is Thomas Harrington, though. He has a 2.21 ERA. He's 11-2 on the season and 85.2 innings pitched. He started 14 games, you know, 0.89 whip. He's pretty dang good. 109-16 strikeout to walk ratio. So this guy has numbers, you know, he's not playing in the SEC, but he has numbers better than Chase Dolander. So he is right. Their best pitcher. So I'm curious to see if they go with another one of their starters against Georgia Tech, try to win that game. And then if they play Tennessee on Saturday, they'll put Harrington on the mound. Mm-hmm. But it'll be fun to see if this happens, which I hope it does, because I want to see Dolander go against Harrington just to see how that works. And you know, obviously, this lineup face the best Campbell has to offer. You know, with this guy's numbers, with anything Campbell has to offer, I mean, you know, I feel like we might be beating a dead horse with ISU. Oh, you know, you afraid of anything? Because I don't think Tennessee should be. But Campbell is not one to be slept on.
Right.
And, like I said, their bullpen depth is pretty weak in my eyes from the numbers. So if Tennessee can wear them down, which is what we've seen a lot this season, they did it to Kentucky. You know, that onslaught they had in the eighth and ninth innings. Of course, Kentucky was playing their, sixth game on the week? So
yep. It
was bound to happen. But yeah, and they don't have many left-handed pitchers. So especially from pitchers who have started. So I wouldn't expect anything different with the lineup. Probably look at the two-hole, Jarrell at the six, Blake Burke playing DH to start at least. So yeah, they got a couple of good arms. High in appearances is righty Ty Cummings. He's got 28 appearances on the season. He's 4-1 with 4.21 ERA, probably the best arm that's consistently come out of the Campbell bullpen. 51.1 innings pitched from Cummings. So they got a couple of names to look at for, I guess, more of an in-depth name-wise Campbell preview. You can check it out on the site when I release our official regional preview, probably by tomorrow morning. But Jake, I do want to ask you, because I know you're going to have an opinion on this. How about that Campbell post on Twitter? I hope you saw it. But
I did.
The only orange that matters. Huh.
Yeah. Bold take.
Dude.
Bold take to poke the bear.
Why?
But also, okay. Firstly, you don't want to get in the mentions of not only the top team in the country, but a fan base that, as we've seen, has quite a bit of bite back. And so I think, you know, not only poking the bear in terms of gloating about the orange with Tennessee, but you don't want to poke the bear in terms of Vol Twitter, because that is a dangerous game, as anyone can attest. But secondly, as I pointed out, the jerseys, in the graphic do not match the orange in the square
The
little paint swap thing, whatever you call it. So that stood out and was a little cringy. So I'll let you go with it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I see. Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
Tough look.
Man, I saw this post. I just scrolled by it. I didn't click to see the comments because I see there's 271. So yeah, I cannot...
The comments are not pretty.
I cannot imagine who has filled up those replies.
There is one of, and Jack, if you know, you know, there is one of Andy giving a certain finger sign most of them are along those lines. So
love it, dude. Oh, I see it. Oh, he didn't even send it either. It's another account.
Nope.
Oh, man. Oh, that's going to get me rolling. Yeah. VFL Bowser, friend of the show. But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Friend we of love the show. We love Andy.
Yeah. We are Andy stans over here. Yes. At Volunteer Country.
Yeah. And I feel like most of our listeners know who he is. So
yeah.
So yeah. Gotta
and if you don't, then believe me, you will probably find out at some point soon.
Yeah. 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 Oh, man, that's too great. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to go through those later when I'm just not doing anything, because that's going to be premium content. But yeah, I don't know why in the world they would do that. I feel like, I mean, you got to know what you're getting yourself into, or you're right, just like, plain dumb.
You got to know you're just stepping off the cliff.
Yeah. You're like, hey, you know what? I'm making the conscious decision to do this. Screw it. We're going to do it. That's what they did. Yeah, that was like their mindset.
I am just fully self-aware that I am going to subject myself to all sorts of ridicule with this. Just, you know, it's done. So yeah.
Yeah.
What was it? I saw something from, it was like a Campbell, like social media manager or something, that like talking about like the comments. Oh, I can't remember what she said. Now I had scrolled past it and had like kind of chuckled and then couldn't get back to it. I'm sorry. Anyway, she something like she knew it was going to be bold and didn't imagine that like the comments were going to like, what was it, like make her cry or something. But like, people are coming hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. That post makes me want a Saturday night matchup even more. So maybe we'll get it. But for that to happen, Campbell will have to get through Georgia Tech. So Georgia Tech, like Campbell, as a team, has hit over 100 home runs this season. They got a pretty dang good lineup. Couple of notable things from their season. They went 1-1 in midweekers against Georgia Southern. They had a series win over Wright State, which Tennessee fans all know. They beat Georgia in a series on a neutral field earlier in the season. They swept Virginia Tech in a series early in the season. But key word, early in the season, as Georgia Tech has progressed, they have kind of declined in how they've done this year. They went 1-1 in the ACC tournament, got bounced fairly early, but they still have some guys who can hit. As Jake mentioned earlier, Kevin Parada, one of the best players in college baseball this year, has 26 home runs. And you know, they have five players with 14 or more homers. So they got a dangerous lineup. They should have some success in Lindsey Nelson Stadium, especially, you know, well, I'm not going to say especially, but it just depends on what day they would play Tennessee, if at all. Because as good as Chase Dolander has been, I don't think any team is going to be able to put up over five, you know, no team is going to score more than four or five runs against Chase Dolander while he's on the mound. In my opinion, he's just too good. So he's been pitching at least six innings every time, maybe seven. So, you know, if Georgia Tech's going to have success, it's going to be able to have some success against Drew Beam. Maybe Chase Burns not his best on Sunday or something like that. But like Campbell, and even to a more extreme extent, their pitching is not very good. So, you know, they got – no one has a sub 5.40 ERA that has pitched 25 or more innings, Jake. So, Wow. Yeah. It's probably not going to be pretty if they have to go against these Tennessee bats. So this is why I think Campbell has the best chance to knock off Tennessee this weekend of any team, because they have a really good starter and they have a lineup that can compete with Georgia Tech, that can try to compete with Tennessee's, you know, if Tennessee goes cold, which we've seen them do.
We have.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just a general rundown of those two teams. Like I said, Tennessee is going to play one of them on Saturday. They will play Alabama State on Friday night. Alabama State should not impose too much of a problem to Tennessee. They did win their conference. They're SWAC winners. They only played two SEC teams this season. They lost to Alabama pretty handedly in a midweeker, and they also played Auburn, took them to extras, but lost. So they give him a run for the money. But yeah, Corey King, he's about to know, I guess, for the Hornets. He leads the team in all categories, was named the SWAC Player of the Year, Hitter of the Year, Newcomer of the Year. He's a stud. He was 36-7 on the year, 87 total hits and 14 homers. So he's a name to know. Kyler McIntosh, another Hunter May. Those three are their top bats. But yeah, so I would not think too much about Friday night's matchup against Alabama State. Never want to overlook opponent, but I think Saturday is what's going to be the marquee regional matchup for the baseballs. And
Jack, I'm sorry, but when you said SWAC, I understand it's the name of a conference, but
yeah.
I just cannot help thinking of it as a verb, as in like something that like someone from Vol Twitter would do to that social media manager from Campbell, like, I'm gonna SWAC you. So I'm sorry. That's
funny.
Random off track for today. So no, yes. There's your little blurb from Jake. Congratulations.
You're fine. Yeah, it's fine. You're good. Yeah, Southwestern Athletic Conference, I think that's what it stands for. Or it could be Atlantic, Southwestern Atlantic. It's one of those. Hold on, I gotta make sure now, because for us, Southwestern Athletic Conference. Bam. All right, got it right the first time. Look at me.
There you go.
Yeah. So the only SWAC team Tennessee played all year was Alabama A&M. And they like pretty, I think they blew them out on a midweek like they did most. So yeah, but Alabama A&M was not among the best in the SWAC. So Alabama State's going to be better, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Last time the two teams played though, and Alabama State and Tennessee was April in 2016, and Alabama State actually won. That was before Tony Vitello's time, but you know, interesting. Yeah. So, and it was in Knoxville, but it was a much different team. All right, Jake, we got a guest coming on in about 9 minutes. So we're probably going to take a little break here on the podcast as I'm done talking about regionals. What do you got anything else to add?
Nothing else except just, I think that the thing I'm looking forward to most this weekend is just to see how the party turns out again for Lindsey Nelson, because they put it out last year and, you know, had a block party, all of that. So I'm interested to see what Tennessee does in that regard for holding all these fans, because tickets are not cheap right now on Vivid Seats.
Oh yeah. It's hard to get tickets this weekend, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's like general. 205.
Yeah. And there's not many available, I would say.
Right.
Cause they gave all the season tickets holders.
Yeah.
They get to, anyway, I don't know. I haven't looked too much into that, but I know some people were complaining. So
yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break here on the Volunteer Country on SI podcast. Stick around as we'll have interview with SB Nation Grizzlies writer Bryson Wright. Covers the Grizzlies really well for that site. He's from Knoxville, so he has a really good knowledge of Kennedy Chandler and how maybe Casey could fit in with Memphis if he were to get drafted by them, which has been generating a little more buzz as we've, you know, gotten closer to draft day in the NBA. With Tyus Jones's contract situation being up in the air and all that mess. So we're gonna have Bryson on. We're gonna have some fun talking about Kennedy Chandler and his potential fit with the Grizzlies. Stick around right here on the Volunteer Country on SI podcast. Volunteer Country on SI podcast is brought to you by Acker Travel Company by Dream Vacations. If you're looking to book travel anytime during the year, especially in the summer, but don't want to do all that monotonous work of booking that travel, be sure and contact our friends Beth and Bryce at Acker Travel Company, and they will do all the work for you. And on top of that, they'll throw in a free $50 Visa gift card. I mean, what is there to lose? Go ahead and give them a call now at 678-983-2172 or visit their website at backer.dreamvacations.com to book. That number again, everybody, is 678-983-2172. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Volunteer Country on SI podcast. As mentioned, we have a great guest with us today, Bryson Wright of SB Nation Grizzlies, but goes to school in Knoxville, so a good friend of mine. Bryson, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Excited to talk about Kennedy Chandler, man. Very excited about this.
I know, exactly. The draft is now this month. We're into June, so it's draft season, baby, in the NBA. And you know, obviously, Kennedy Chandler is the volunteer that is entering the NBA draft, the lone volunteer after Santi and Joe announced they're coming back. So let's get into it. You know, there's been some mocks with Memphis taking Kennedy. Not a whole lot, but I feel like the buzz of Kennedy going to Memphis has increased as we've gotten closer to the draft. Memphis, you know, picking in that early 20s range, is right in the sweet spot of where Chandler's probably going to go in the first round. So just kind of a general thought process here to get us started. How do you think he's going to fit in with the Grizzlies? What aspects of his game do you think would mesh well with their system?
Well, I'll say the good thing about him is just his attitude as well. The way that he allowed Rick Barnes to coach him, and just his ability to be coachable. And I think that's something that everybody on the team right now, that the Grizzlies really have. I think that just from a mindset standpoint, he would fit in. And then when it comes to the way he plays, I mean, a steady point guard, he doesn't turn the ball over a lot. I think he could be, he would obviously be the backup to Ja Morant, because we see the kind of superstar that he's becoming. But I do think it would be really good for him to maybe be a backup role. Maybe also it'll be depending on Tyus Jones. We can talk about that a little bit too, whether or not he would be backup or if he would be kind of just there for depth. But either way, I do think him just getting to learn from the developmental team they have over there. We've seen a lot of late round draft picks like Brandon Clark really turn into great players with the developmental team. And I think it would be good for him. I think it would be good for the Grizzlies. But yeah, he could be a good depth guy coming off the bench. His shooting is something that I think has really improved. I think that would help a lot. Maybe even, and his ability to work off the ball, because then you could mess with him in a bunch of different lineups. I know last year they like to do some lineups where they had Ja Morant and Tyus Jones both in there. So I do think it would be really interesting to see what they would do if Kennedy Chandler was on the team. I think he would fit in really well though.
Okay, yeah. And let's talk about Tyus Jones, because that's a huge storyline in Grizzlies offseason. You know, what's going on with him there? I know he an unrestricted free agent after this year or something like that?
No, so he, you know, he is an unrestricted free agent coming in right now. Mm-hmm. And the way that he played last season, I mean, everybody knows the stat. The Grizzlies were 20-5 without Ja Morant in the regular season or whatever the exact record was. And most of that is because of him. So it's looking like he's going to get some opportunities. I think one of the teams people have been talking about is like the New York Knicks might pay him a little bit extra money to come in and be a starting point guard rather than keeping in that bench role, which is why I think that the Grizzlies could be looking for somebody like that going forward.
Yeah, and you know, with Tyus potentially departing, if he doesn't though, do you think that shuts the door on Memphis having their eyes set on Chandler, or do you think that, you know, even if they do keep Jones, they could always use more point guard depth?
Yeah, I don't think it would completely shut the door on it, just because they do still need a true kind of third point guard. Because like I said, last year, Ja missed some time and Tyus started. And whenever Tyus Jones started, they really didn't have another point guard. They let De'Anthony Melton play kind of the second team point guard whenever Ja didn't play. But he's not a true point guard. So I think they do need another true point guard on the team regardless. But obviously if Tyus didn't come back, it would become, instead of just like a need, it would be like, yeah, they really need it. They would need it even more if Tyus wasn't come back. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
If Tyus ends up not coming back, I think it would be more likely that they draft Chandler.
Okay. And, you know, do you think that Kennedy Chandler is good enough to be going in this range? Do you think he's a true, you know, mid to late round, first round pick? Based off of what he showed at Tennessee?
I think he has the potential to be a steal where he is. I know he's kind of started out the season a little slow, but if you look the way he played down the stretch, especially in that SEC tournament, he really came into his own. And you kind of saw everything that the big question for him at the next level was going to be his size and how is he going to be able to defend and his three-point shooting. And I think down the stretch of the season, he proved that he could do that against a top-tier talent in college. Now, of course, the jump to the NBA is going to be a big difference, but he's shown the signs that he would be able to do it. Everybody always talks about his wingspan. That's going to help him a lot. And, yeah, I think that there's a lot of good things with his game, like I said. Extremely quick off the dribble, which mm-hmm. I think that's the number one thing. It's similar to Ja in that kind of aspect. Of course, he's not quite there yet. But, yeah, I think that he has a lot of tools that would make him very successful at the next level. And I think that I think he needs to be in the late first round, though, because I think it would be better for him to go to a situation where he's not expected to completely turn a franchise around like some of these other guys that are going to go in the lottery. And if he came to the Grizzlies, it would be like, okay, we need some depth. We need somebody to come off the bench. We're not looking at you to be Ja Morant. We're not looking at you to be like the guys at the top when they're talking about Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, those guys. They're looking at you to change the franchise. And I don't know if Kennedy is necessarily a franchise changing player, but I mean, if you look at a guy like Grant Williams, who was kind of in this similar situation, and now he's about to be possibly starting game one of the NBA finals. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen that even in these late first round picks that, and you look up in 2 or 3 years and you'll be like, wow, he was a steal. And I think it could end up being something like that, especially if he came to the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it's a good point mentioning Grant, because I think he went 22nd overall and the Grizzlies have the 22nd pick, right? So
they traded out of it. So they traded out of it and they ended up with 21 and took Brandon Clark. But
this year the Grizzlies, what's their pick number? Isn't 22?
Oh yeah, 22 is this year. Yeah. 22 is this year.
So if Kennedy so happens to go to Memphis, they would have been drafted at the same spot. My nerd brain made that connection.
Oh yeah, that would be cool. That would be that's a little niche thing that most people want to think about.
Right. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Casey off ball. You know, his shooting has gotten better. His defense, like you said, his wingspan, although we were lied to this season, is not 6'7". It is 6'5" for his NBA combine stats. But you know, what does KC need to work on most heading into the next level? What is an aspect of a game that he really needs to improve to be successful in the pros?
Well, the first thing is definitely going to be free throw shooting. That's kind of been a problem that the Grizzlies have had in general. But I think he was in the 60% range, and I think he had a couple ugly ones. I'll leave it at that. So I think he definitely needs to work on free throw shooting, and then just being more consistent. Just consistency is all that a team like the Grizzlies is looking for. And it felt like early in the season last year, he would have a game where, oh, he might have 18 points and he'll look like everything that you want. And then it seemed like earlier in the season, he would kind of disappear down the stretch a little bit at times. But like I said, later in the year, he got better. He was a freshman. Stuff like that happens. The Grizzlies have gone after older guys at like overall. So I do think that might be one reason why they wouldn't go for him. I think another guy they're looking for around that same range would be Andrew Nembhard out of Gonzaga. And he's like 22. So he's played 4 years and all that. And that's something that the Grizzlies have looked for. But I mean, we've also seen them go after young guys in the past. And I think that with Kennedy's kind of relationship with Ja's going to work with him. Desmond Bane, I think somebody like that is going to help him with his shooting, all of that, which he's getting better with his shooting, like I said earlier. But I think, I don't know if he's necessarily at an NBA level yet. He's shown flashes that he can be there. But I think those are the two things he really needs to work on. It's the shooting overall, especially the free throw shooting. And then on the defensive end, he's a little undersized, so that's going to be a problem. But even though he's undersized, he plays bigger than he really is, because I feel like he has a really good base and everything like that. And it's in the NBA, it seems like defense isn't always the number one priority, especially in the regular season. So I'm not necessarily worried about his defensive, the way that he looks on defense. I think he'll be fine in the NBA. But yeah, when it comes to offense, it's just mostly just his shooting ability, just because in the NBA, that's everything at this point.
Yeah, it's live or die by the three with most of these teams, and just being able to shoot. And, you know, let's talk about Chandler. If he so happens to run if he's the second or third option at point guard, depending on if Tyus stays, what will he do for players like Desmond Bane and D'Anthony Melton when he's on the floor with them? How does he help with those guys?
So this is where I actually think playing at Tennessee, where you have a lot of guys that can handle the ball, like, of course, Josiah would handle the ball a lot, and he played with that guard lineup where he played with Zakai and he played with all the other guys that would come in, like Santi. So I think that would help him, because he's used to playing with other guys on the court that are also pretty solid ball handlers. So I think that's why if he played with a guy like Desmond Bane has shown in the past that he likes to be a little bit of a point guard sometimes. He doesn't do it a lot, but he's shown that ability. But I think that having a guy like Kennedy, who is a true point guard, come in with the second unit, kind of the way Tyus Jones did, or maybe come in with, even if he's not necessarily the second point guard, come in with Tyus Jones. You never know. There's a lot of different lineups you can do. Just because of the way that he plays off the ball, like I said, he's a really solid cutter, which is something that I think a lot of people have kind of overlooked, because some of those cuts that he was running with John Fulkerson and those guys last year with the big guys were really nice. And the Grizzlies actually do a lot of that in their offense, especially with having Steven Adams setting screens and having Steven Adams at the elbow, kind of similar to what Tennessee did with Fulkerson and some of the other big guys, where Kennedy got a lot of wide open layups off of that. So I think that that's one thing, is if he can continue to grow off the ball like he did at Tennessee, that's just going to make him even better of a fit for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, that's really good stuff, Ryson. And, you know, where you keep up with Tennessee basketball, you know, just as much as I do. What were your expectations? You know, let's travel back in time for a second. What were your expectations for Kennedy Chandler when he was coming to Rocky Top? You know, five-star, elite talent, you know, the hype was insane. Compared to, you know, what were your expectations then? And do you think he lived up to those? Do you think he eventually lived up to those? Maybe just how did he, you know, live up to those expectations in your eyes?
Well, yeah, when the Vols got Kennedy Chandler, I was thinking that he was a guy, he elevates your program to another level, to where you should be competing in the tournament, in the SEC tournament. And I think that that SEC championship definitely does validate him and the way that he played in the SEC tournament, because that's what your best players are supposed to do. When you get a five-star guy, you're expecting him in the big games, he's going to show up and he's going to be the best player on the court. And I would say, even though they lost that Michigan game, he still looked like he was the best player on the court to me.
Definitely.
And I think that's the big thing, is down the stretch, during the season, he was the best player on the court more often than not. And that's really all that I could really ask from him. Obviously, like I said, he kind of struggled. He was inconsistent a little bit earlier in the season. But then you looked up midway through the year, and he's still averaging 14, 15 points per game. And there's not really much more you can ask for. Now, I know some people wanted him to be like a top 10 pick, top 5 pick, all of that. But you really got to sit back and think about the fact that you are one of the top 20, 30 players in the country, when with the number of Division I schools, the number of point guards that are in the country, and the number of players at every position. Like when it comes, like I was talking about Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, you're competing with guys that are like 7 feet tall when mm-hmm. you get to the top of the draft. It's not easy to be a top 10 pick. So I think him doing what he did at Tennessee, obviously, I had a feeling that he wasn't going to come back. I think everybody had a feeling that he wasn't going to be more than a one-year player at Tennessee, but he came in, he kind of took the team to the next level, and they won the first SEC championship in, what, 40 years?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything more that you could really ask for him. Obviously, you would have liked to see them make a little bit of a deeper tournament run, but the reason they lost that tournament game was not because Kennedy Chandler didn't show up. He showed up. He was one of the only players that showed up, and that was the main problem. But in that tournament game, he showed everything that I think a scout would want to see from him. He showed his ability to stretch the floor a little bit more than he had in the past, and it looked like nobody on that Michigan team could handle him off the dribble at all. So I don't think there's anything more you could have expected from him. I think he did everything that Tennessee fans probably could want from him. And, I mean, you look at the position he's in now, I think he's in a great position to where, like I said earlier, he's not necessarily going to be looked at to change a franchise, but I think we're going to look up in 2 or 3 years and they're going to be like, Kennedy Chandler was a steal taken where he was taken.
Yeah. Yeah, Bryson, that's very good stuff there. And, you know, it's going to be exciting to see where he eventually goes. I think if he goes to Memphis, it's going to be a heck of a storyline, him being a Memphis native. Obviously, that connection he has with Ja Morant, which we have all seen on Twitter. So yeah, if he does it, it's going to be great to see. And maybe he can make a splash with the Grizz as soon as year one coming off the bench. Bryson, appreciate you coming on tonight and this morning, I should say. But tonight is a big night in the NBA. It's game one of the finals. Just for fun, let's get your predictions for tonight and for the finals as a whole.
Okay, so I took a lot of time thinking about this. I came down to, I think the Warriors are going to win it in 7 games. I think that, yeah, I know the groan. But they haven't lost a home game the entire playoffs. And that home court advantage is just different. Now, I'm not saying that Boston is a slouch. That's why I said I think they're going to win in 7. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, that Chase Center crowd on top of the experience of Steph and Clay, who have been in these finals games, it seems like for the past decade, they've been in almost every finals game, except for those couple years where Clay got hurt. So I do think that's going to come through a lot. But yeah, I'm going to go with Warriors in 7. I do think that the Celtics, I don't know if they're going to win game 1 just because the Warriors are really good off of rest, but I do think they're probably going to win game 2. That would be my pick. I think Warriors are going to win game 1, Celtics win game 2, and then from there we'll figure it out. But I think my pick as of now is going to be Warriors in 7.
Man, Celtics are just lethal in game 7s though. They just find a way.
That is true. Now that is the one thing that made me, I told you, I thought about this a lot. Because we've also seen a 27-point game from Grant Williams in the Game 7. Now, if we get another one of those, then maybe the Celtics are going to win. But I don't know. And obviously, they also had one of those Game 7s at home, but then they played the Heat on the road and won in Game 7 as well. So it's not to say that the Celtics are just going to roll over. That's why I still think it's going to go 7 games. I'm really excited about this matchup, though. And I think if you're a basketball fan, regardless of who you're cheering for, regardless of if you like the Warriors, whether you like the Celtics, dislike the Celtics, like Steph Curry, hate Jason Tatum, it really doesn't matter because it's going to be exciting basketball. And I think that's the most important part.
Yeah, yeah, it is. As much as I love Luka Doncic and I think Jimmy Butler's a heck of a player in Miami, I felt this series coming in the finals, and I'm not complaining at all because it's going to be great basketball from start to finish. I think it goes 7 games. I really feel, gun to my head, it's like Golden State's going to win, but I'm just holding out hope for Boston because I just love the way they play. I love the way Marcus Smart plays. You know, Grant Williams is an incentive, but you know, we'll see. But it all starts tonight, NBA Finals Game 1 tonight, and Bryson. Before we go, tell everybody how they can find you on the socials.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you can follow me on Twitter at BrysonWright3. And that's also my tag name on SB Nation. You can go on there and find all the articles I'm writing. I'm going to be working on some draft stuff coming up soon with Draft Profile. So if there's anybody that you would like to see, I'm sure I'll have something on them pretty soon.
Kennedy Chandler.
that may or may not be one of the articles.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. All right, Bryson. Well, if you don't have anything else, I'm gonna let you go here this morning. Appreciate you hopping on, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. All right, everybody, that's gonna wrap up this edition of the Thursday, June 2nd Volunteer Country on Sports Illustrated podcast. We had some fun with Jake, you know, the first part of the podcast talking some Tennessee baseball regional preview. Then we had Bryson on talking Kennedy Chandler and his potential fit with the Grizzlies. So everybody, Matt will be back here with you guys tomorrow, I believe, to talk some recruiting and keep this daily schedule going. I'm going to be more on the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday side, I believe, moving forward. Podcast is going to be hosted by yours truly. Then on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I think Matt will have you guys covered with recruiting. So yeah, everybody have a great rest of your Thursday and we'll be back soon.